Hey everybody, Jonathan Dorr with you once again. Welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. As always, thanks for the pleasure of your time. And as I always say, if no one else tells you, thank you also for the amazing work you do every day as a Catholic educator. You're doing such good stuff. I know sometimes you may not feel like it, but this is a podcast about you, about introducing you to people and ideas that are going to be a blessing to you in your vocation. Today we've got Dr. Paul Morrissey. It's a fantastic interview. He is a lovely human doing some really good work in the liberal arts. He's been all the way from the classroom. You're going to relate to him. He's going to resonate with your experience all the way up to positions of very senior leadership in university level education, which you're going to hear about. Now, only a bit of housekeeping from me, please, is wherever you're hearing this, would you do me two favors? Number one, would you please subscribe to the podcast? If you're in iTunes, Android, you can grab the RSS feed. Wherever you're hearing this, please subscribe to the channel. There's also going to be an email subscribe box somewhere around this podcast, and make sure you subscribe to the email just so you get the next update every time an episode comes out. We usually have them coming out every Monday morning, so please make sure you're subscribed and connected. Last thing from me, please do yourself a favor, grab the free trial to the Going Deeper resource. We have over 400 Catholic schools around the world using this amazing resource. I want you to take the trial. It's absolutely no commitment. You get 4 weeks of content, so you can just check out how this great program is helping inspire, encourage, motivate Catholic teachers and Catholic schools all over the world. So would you do that for me? Grab the trial. Wherever you're seeing this or hearing this, there'll be links to that free trial for Going Deeper. I want you to grab that. All right, that's it from me right now. I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Paul Morrissey, amazing guy. He's now the president of Campion College, a fantastic liberal arts college here in Australia, but he's got so much to share with you. So enjoy, let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. My name's Jonathan Doyle, always great to have the pleasure of your company. Well, we have a treat for you today because it's an in-studio guest. Most of our guests, as you know, are from all over the planet. And I guess today's from the same planet, actually, but he happens to be in our studio, in the office, in the nerve centre of the Catholic Teacher Podcast here in Australia. So a very special guest today is currently the president of Campion College, which is a fantastic liberal arts college here in Australia. Now, many of our American listeners, of course, are very familiar with the liberal arts tradition, but for Australian listeners, we're going to learn a little bit about what liberal arts is. We're going to talk about education and the human person. We're going to talk about all sorts of interesting things. So sit back, relax, do not operate heavy machinery. Dr. Paul Morrissey, welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast.
Well, it's great to be here, Jonathan. It's great to be in beautiful Canberra, sunny Canberra.
And what do you think of, yeah, I was going to say, what do you think of our weather for our listeners? What's it like? What have you experienced of our weather today?
A bit chilly. I drove in this morning quite early and there was quite a fog.
Yeah.
And the temperature gauge in the car,
yeah,
was descending rapidly as I came into,
yeah,
Canberra.
So yeah, it was actually quite tropical for us today. I was on the bike at 5 a.m. as I am most days, and we'll get down to minus 8. So I've had water freeze in the bottles before, in the water bottles on the bike, but today was 3.
Three.
Which is,
well,
really tropical
that
for
is,
us.
That is tropical.
It's kind of Hawaiian shirts on the bike and stuff. So now you're in the national capital here for some meetings. You've taken a little bit of time out of your schedule. Look, tell us a little bit about, I've introduced you as the work you're doing with Campion College. We'll get to that. But tell us a little bit about your journey into the Catholic education space. Where did you start, your vocation, some of the key highlights? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan. Well, in fact, it's great to be on the Catholic Teacher Podcast. I started life as a Catholic teacher in terms of my working life. I did a BA in Melbourne and then followed up with a dip ed and went into Catholic education. First a growing co-ed school out in the out the outer suburbs of Melbourne, and then spent 6 years teaching at Mazenod College, which
what,
is run
what
by
what
the...
was your first memory of your first school? Do you remember that first week?
I
as
do.
A new teacher?
And I had 4 year 9 classes,
three year nine
RE classes,
yeah,
religious education. And I came in very idealistic.
Yeah.
You know, I had a great desire to change the lives of these students, great desire to impart the Catholic faith to these students. Now, that idealism probably lasted about a week. I mean, it was tough going. It was a new neighbourhood.
Yeah.
Pretty rough. Beautiful kids, but, you know, I came in very idealistic and with not a lot of the art of teaching, I would say.
Okay.
And so it's great to be idealistic, great to be passionate, but you also need the art of teaching.
You do. You need the I mean, often I talk about the professionalism, professionalization of the teaching mission and vocation. So there's a pendulum swing here, isn't there, between, you know, extreme idealism and I'm going to change the world, which we need that, as you're saying, but also it's highly appropriate that that there is that professional aspect. I mean, last week we were talking about one of the documents, the religious dimension of education, the Catholic school, paragraph 50. I know I'm a document nerd, but I have to look at them every week. But there's a beautiful thing there about just how appropriate academic and intellectual formation is in a Catholic school. So I guess listening to you, that there is that need for both the energy and idealism and passion and the professional skill set. But I'm going to have to push back here because I don't think you've lost that idealism. You're operating in a different sphere of education now, but you're still very passionate about young people.
Passionate. And again, I never lost that.
Yeah.
But I learned quickly that it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
And I think although professionalism is important, I think today there is a risk that we're making teaching too much process orientated.
Sure.
Too much about, you know, what is the latest fad, what it, you know, student-centered and so on. All these sort of, every two or three years is a new fad in education. And I think that's a danger too.
Yeah.
I prefer the expression, the art of teaching, that you need to learn it as an art form because it's about being able to impart knowledge that you've received, that you've mastered, and then you have to pass that on to the next generation.
And on that, like, we're jumping around here because I still want to get to sort of the journey. The kind of the classical understanding of the impartation of knowledge and learning, that classical tradition that we'd associate with sort of Aristotle and the classical Greek thought around that, yes, education is not the filling of a bucket, it's the lighting of a fire, but there was this, you know, learning knowledge was okay. But as you're alluding to, many of these fads are like, you know, student-directed learning. Let the kids figure out what they'd like to learn. I'm going, with respect, I mean, my kids now, I remember being in primary school and I'd nail 12 times tables by whatever. And we did it by rote learning, right? I mean, I'm starting to sound like one of those old guys from the Muppets now. Because when I was young. But, yeah, I think you make a great point that these flipped learning, or not flipped learning, but these new strategies that come out all the time, yeah, I think they can be distracting. I guess we take the best from it, but... Mm. So let's press on. So you survived that first experience. You go to Mazenon College, which I've been to, great school. What do you remember of your time there?
I loved it, all boys school. So I love teaching the boys.
Why?
I think I run the risk here of getting in a slight bit of trouble.
One
of the things that I experienced at a co-ed school
was
when you critique a student or when you discipline a student, it's very different for a boy or a girl.
Okay.
And so if you discipline a boy... You know, later that afternoon, they're back. Okay, sir, how are you going? You know, all's good. With a girl, I remember this in my first year of teaching. You know, I probably got a bit, you know, as a first-year teacher, you know, you get quite angry quite quickly sometimes. Yeah. And I got a bit angry with a group of girls. They didn't look at me for about 3 years.
Wow.
You know, they took that really personally. Wow. And so I felt a bit more comfortable in a single-sex school.
Sure.
All boys. So I really loved that.
Yep.
And... it was at Mazenod I really learned how to teach,
yeah.
I felt. There was a lot of older teachers there who were fantastic teachers, and I really learned off them, the way they cared for the boys, but the way they loved learning and loved to impart knowledge to the next generation.
Yeah.
That's what I really fed off. So I did. I really enjoyed my time at Mazenod College, and that's where I guess I was confirmed in my vocation in terms of education.
So there was a point there where you kind of just felt, I fit here. Like, this is why I'm kind of on the planet, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And particularly with your senior boys, teaching them either RE, history or English, that's what I was doing. And when you can really see when they were actually interested in learning.
Yeah.
Some of them just because they wanted to do well in their HSC, VCE.
Yeah.
But you could see. And when something sort of just tweaked for them, that's just gold as a teacher.
One of my favourite quotes the last few weeks has been, I came across this summer that, you know, no one can do your push-ups for you. I love that. For a bunch of reasons in business and life, I love that quote. You know, you've got to do the work. But listening to you there, you can't fake passion. No one can do passion for you. And I think as an educator, when you genuinely care about a topic, we've all had those teachers, and some of them are listening to this right now, you know, who they love Shakespeare. Or I can remember once when I was teaching, I felt it was appropriate that they heard the full 1812 overture with cannons. And so I remember there being with the boys, and you know, when I was teaching it, and I was like, you know, and wait for it, and this is the moment, everybody, like, and also from the pearl fisherman, the aria that Pavarotti always did so well, you know, Vincetto, that high note. And I used to be there with students going, here it comes. So yeah, when you have that passion, enthusiasm. But I think what's happening for many teachers now is the intensity of the pressure and the expectations and the documentation and the government expectations and parents is that, you know, there's so many passionate teachers who just want to share the great rich tradition, which is something I think Campion does really well, but they're getting buried under this compliance. And yeah, we'll get to that.
Absolutely. And I wrote an op-ed for The Australian last year about education, the importance of wisdom in education. In one of the paragraphs, I wrote that the single most important criteria for to be a teacher is to love what you want to teach.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go and do a four-year degree, you can get all the qualifications, but if you don't love what you want to teach, I mean...
Yeah. You know, what's that other great saying, no one can pay me enough to hate my life? It's like, I often say to people, I used to do this in seminars, right? So I've, you know, worked with hundreds of thousands of people around the world, but in seminars. But I remember saying to people, look, if you really hate what you do, like, with no disrespect to our Buddhist brothers and sisters, you're not coming back. You got one shot at this. And if you really want to wake up every day hating what you do, now, people listening to this might be feeling that. Sometimes it can just be a case of changing environment and schools. And I did that when I first started out. So you got to know when the Holy Spirit might be moving you somewhere. But yeah, I think it's the vocational essence, isn't it? It's like, I'm partnering with God in his salvific action in the world. And he tends to do that through the things that we actually like. Like, you know, that scripture from John where Jesus says, which of you fathers, you know, if your child asks for you for bread? It's like, often, I remember speaking in London recently, I was saying to teachers, do you think God's there going, I have this vocation for you and I want to make you really unhappy? Wah-ah-ah. And it was like, yeah, that's not the kind of God I'm interested in. So you finish at Mazenod. I want to ask you, when did you know it was time to move? What happened for you that you sensed? Can you look back?
Well, I wasn't looking to move, to be honest. I wasn't looking to move. So when I was at Mazenod, I was studying theology part-time and just kept going, basically, kept doing theology part-time. And then I was asked to move to the University of Notre Dame in Sydney to teach the core curriculum there. Yeah. So it was almost to be like a high school teacher to first-year uni students.
Yeah.
They had to do a theology unit and none of them necessarily wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So it was a compulsory unit. And so the university was really looking for a school teacher, in a sense, who's qualified in theology.
Yep.
So I happily fit the bill. And
was it a hard decision? I mean, was there a discernment process where you went, but I love being with the young people, I love being with the kids? Was it easy
Absolutely.
To go?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So that was hard. I mean, one, it was a move in terms of family, but also just, you know, I really enjoyed my job.
Yeah.
Loved it. And so it was, you know, it was a discernment, but also, you know, being open to the Holy Spirit, I just felt, you know, this was a call.
Yeah.
It was a new university or campus, at least, starting in Sydney. And
yeah.
It was a really exciting project. So I thought, well, you know, the Lord's knocking for a reason. I better answer.
Yeah. And that's the essence of discernment, which is something, a journey I've been on the last year or two. I often say the Catholic Church has the best product in the world with the worst marketing department. We have these riches, man. We have so much gold. The discernment stuff we have, but whether from the Ignatian tradition or... you know, we have this rich well of discernment. Can you look back? I mean, the obvious answer is yes, but do you look back over your journey from, you know, out of suburban schools to Mazenod? Do you see the hand of the Holy Spirit in this process? I mean, obviously, yes, but what's that like for you? What does it help us understand how we can cooperate with the action of God over a life project, over a career journey? How do we do that? What are some of the markers? What did you do? I mean, you didn't flip a coin, right? You were sort of like, were you attracted to something and you were like, oh, this feels like something? What was your vocational, your discernment experience
like?
Yeah,
I'll go back a little bit. So when I had my conversion, so I've been Catholic all my life, but I really, I guess, met the Lord in a real way when I was in India. I volunteered I went to India to work for the Missionaries of Charity in the then named Calcutta.
When did you do that?
When I was 23 years old.
So this was
before teaching?
Before teaching.
Yes, I was in the middle of a BA.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of BA students.
Yeah, it's like, what are you going to do when you finish?
Take a bit of time off.
What are you going to do when you finish?
I just went. I'd heard some other people who'd gone, and I was really thought, gee, that sounds like something to do. And I just had it on my heart. Yep. So I went, and I was there for a few months, and it was there. I met some very holy Jesuits, apart from some of these missionaries of charity, including Mother Teresa. So I met Mother Teresa when I was there. She was still alive. And I was just struck by their intelligence, their knowledge of the faith, their knowledge of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I felt either as a priest or as a layman, I would love to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I just, you know, they were teaching me, you know, through their actions, but also just through speaking. Really.
Yeah.
And I just thought that'd be fantastic. And I still remember this, you know, I was having some prayer time when I was in India, and I had a flashback to my own schooling, and I saw myself teaching myself.
Oh, really?
Thinking, gee, I'd love to have been someone different there teaching.
Yeah.
Than the teacher that was teaching me.
Yeah.
So that was the moment, and it's still very clear to me.
Yeah.
So I knew then I was going to be a teacher in some way.
Yeah.
And so that really inspired me, because I was in the middle of this BA and sort of modelling along. So I got back, finished the BA, did a dip ed, and got straight into it because of that moment. So that was that pushed me into that direction, I guess. And ever since then, the Lord has just really placed, I guess, the movements of my thing in my path. I haven't really looked for them, but they've just sort of arrived, you know.
I have three points on this. First, please write a book about it, because the rest of us need to hear this sort of stuff more often. Second, I just resonate. You know, I had an experience where I'd been at a Jesuit school in England. I did a gap year. I did most people be familiar with that. You know, you take a year out. So I applied, and I tell this story. I wrote letters, and I have to explain sometimes to an audience what that was. It was paper, and you have a pen, and you write things on it. And so I sent 36 letters to England from Australia. I was 19 years old. To apply to all these schools, and I got 35 rejections. And then I was depressed, and then I got this one yes from a 500-year-old Jesuit school, Stonyhurst College, which changed my life. And I had I often say to people when I was there, my role was to drink professionally for Australia. So I definitely partied pretty hard, but I had this strange religious conversion, very powerful conversion, really through the mass and a lot of the art and stuff that was there. So anyway, I come back from that experience, and I was very dislocated here in Australia. I had a beautiful experience working with students and that whole thing, but I decided I was going to become an organizational psychologist, which is makes a lot of sense, right? So I ended up. I'm just going to move my microphone here, people, because it's got a mind of its own. It's moving. So I ended up getting accepted into the Australian National University, and I had the paperwork in my hands to sign off on going into organisational psychology. And as clear as day, I remember I was on the bus. I was coming back to where I was living, and I was reading a biography of a very famous rugby coach. And there was this moment, and it's like a Hollywood scene where the music comes up and the sun came through the windows. I remember exactly where I was. And there's this line in it about this guy when he was teaching. And something happened when I read that line, and I closed the book, looked out the window, and knew that I was going to teach. And I threw that paper away and never applied, and the rest is history. But so that was my second point. One is please write a book. Two is that I've had a kind of similar experience. And third is what you're talking about. God doesn't pick certain... Well, it's not as if he wants to withhold, he wants to give you this guidance and journey and vocation, and he wants to hide it from everyone else. So I listen to your talk, and I think of one of the great things we can do in Catholic education, and what you're doing at Campion, is to help young people encounter this concept of, what if God's really got something for me? What if God's really, because I think what I talk about, the factory model of education, many of our Catholic schools are often so fixated on exam results and getting kids and bums on seats and enrollments and all this stuff, and I get that. But there's a bigger playing field here, isn't there? Like, all these students that come in the class every day, God has a plan for their life that's going to bring them richness and happiness and joy. Just quickly, tell us at Campion, do you feel a bit of that? Do you see that? Do you feel like you're participating in helping? I mean, how do you, in your role now, and how do the staff that work with you, how do you help that happen for young people?
Yes, I mean, I'm very conscious of that particular question. And I think you're right. Our schools, and this is no critique of the schools, because it's the system they're in.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is so much, at least here in Australia, for our American audiences, there's a lot of a lot of compliance, a lot of top-down curriculum modelling, exams everyone has to sit, a way of teaching to those exams that everyone has to follow.
Yeah.
It just stifles the spirit. It stifles that understanding of education that is far more personal, far more human, really. And so that's very hard for our students and for our teachers to hear perhaps the Holy Spirit speaking to them in terms of what potential they have and what gifts they have. But having said that, at Campion, we don't see ourselves as beholden to any curriculums as set down.
Yeah.
We're fully accredited and everything, but we can teach what we want to teach. And that's a great gift and a real blessing for us. And what we want to do is give our students in the three-year degree, give our students the best that's been thought, the best that's been written, for them to really plunge deep into what it means to be human, what it means to think about these big questions. And so therefore, just by teaching it, you know, you see the lights go on for students and think, oh, you know, I came into this degree thinking I'm going to do this, but hang on a tick.
Yeah.
No, I'm a really good writer. I didn't realize. Or, you know, I came into the, yeah.
Or they read Evelyn Waugh, or they read Plato's Symposium, and something happens that never would have happened if it was like, you know.
Exactly. Well, you know, one of our graduates, this is an interesting one, he's fairly, you know, fairly conformed. He thought he'd, you know, do some sort of business degree or something in IT, or it was fairly, you know, normal sort of career path. Mm. But he found he was really good at writing, and, you know, now he's publishing, you know, sci-fi fiction books on the internet, mostly in the States.
Wow.
And doing a great job, you know. So he's just found something that he didn't realise he had just by doing something that's, you know, not necessarily what everyone else would do. But it is drawing on the riches of the tradition.
Yeah.
You know, drawing on, you know, very diverse thinkers. A lot of things, you know, we disagree with. But important thinkers, people who really wanted to understand what it means to be a human being in the world.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not it's the actual program itself I see is really human forming, but also allowing students to think outside the square and be open to the Holy Spirit. I mean, not all of our students are Catholic or Christian necessarily, but at least, you know, they're opening their horizons.
The other thing you're doing, which I think I really want to break this open a bit because I try and talk about it on most of these episodes, I'm on a mission to help more and more Catholic educators understand this concept of the transcendentals, of truth, beauty and goodness. So for those who aren't familiar with it, basically it goes back pretty much to the Greeks. You know, Aristotle in his Ethics would talk about that really that we're drawn to the good, what Aristotle would say, you know, he says, which all men have eventually called God, but that we experience the divine through the modalities of truth, beauty and goodness. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Mm. Now, it's funny, Nietzsche said that if you stare at the abyss long enough, the abyss stares back, which means whatever we give our attention to is drawn to us, you know. Mm. So in our Catholic schools and in places like Campion, if we expose our students to what is true, what is good and what is beautiful, it's not neutral. Mm. They become consistently, or they can become consistently what they imbibe. So everyone listening, I just want to encourage you, we're going to talk about this for a little bit now, but truth, beauty and goodness are one of the great things that Catholic schools can bring to the world. Can you speak to that a little bit about Campion and some of, like, you know, the great books and the stuff? Where does truth, beauty and goodness fit into the experience of what you're bringing at Campion?
Yes, absolutely. So I guess the truth is looking at our history, Western civilization, and how people have come to the truth. So our students study theology, so the truth as such. They study philosophy, which looks at different understandings of what it means for something to be true.
Yeah.
Can we know the truth?
Yeah.
How can we know the truth? Then we look at historical truths, you know, the events that have shaped Western civilization. And then in literature, we see how artists have, you know, dwelt upon this truth and talked about this truth in story, in poetry and so on. So, you know, the transcendentals are there, so the truth. The goodness, I guess we cultivate that. I mean, it's cultivated in all these works, obviously, but more so, I think, in terms of the extracurricular. So we see ourselves as a community of learning. So the good of the other. We need to look for the good of the other. both in terms of allowing them to learn, but also to learn together.
Yeah.
And then not necessarily to be on mission together, because it's an academic program, but through our chaplaincies, through the Good Works programs and so on, they're there to put into action the truth that they've received. And yeah. That's the goodness. And beauty should imbibe the whole intellectual experience,
yeah.
both in terms of, you know, the extracurricular art we have, the scholar that we have, the grounds that we have, the statues we have, the artworks, the chapel. All that should be beautiful aesthetically, but beauty in a deeper sense as well, that it shines the truth and the goodness that's around us.
Yeah.
So I think that's very true. There's a great book by Benedict Rochelle that looks at the great Franciscan friar of the Bronx.
Yeah.
And he spoke about the transcendentals as being the three modalities, if you like, of evangelization. And everyone's drawn, some are drawn to one more than the other, but they all go together. They're all transcendental properties of the one being. But some are drawn more to truth, some are more drawn more to the goodness, and some are drawn more to beauty. But so the Catholic institution needs to encompass all of them. And I think Catholic schools, and this is, a bit of a risk for Catholic schools, is because they, and again, I'm speaking here for Australia, I don't know the experience in the United States and other countries so much, but we are beholden a lot to a particular function as our Catholic schools in terms of fitting into the state system.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, you know, our buildings often reflect that functionality sometimes.
Yeah.
Our programs certainly reflect, our curriculum reflects that functionality a bit.
Yeah.
And I think we're pretty good on the good part. I think we try to, our Catholic schools are proactive in terms of that. But it's, I think we need, there's work to be done there. I think you speak the truth there. So no doubt about it.
Yeah, there's plenty to be done. And I think you're right. I think our schools here have always done the pastoral care side well, the goodness part well, and the justice side well, they do, within certain parameters. As you were talking, I was thinking, and I'll put this in the show notes for people, Bishop Robert Barron spoke recently at the LA Congress, and his keynote is really good.
Yeah, it's great.
It's on beauty. Have you heard it?
Yes,
yeah,
it's fantastic.
When he talks about, was it Dante writing? Who wrote the Divine Comedy? Dante.
Yeah, Dante.
So he talks about, I'll edit that out. Yeah, the Catholic Teacher Podcast guy doesn't even know who wrote the Divine Comedy. All right, who hired me?
It's a bit of comedy.
Yeah, you know, he talks about this moment, you know, he sees the woman that he loves so much, and he decides that to capture, he's going to write the greatest poem ever. There's a beautiful line where Bishop Barron goes, and by God, he did. So that stuff, even at my wedding, I remember it's almost 20 years ago now, I quoted from Plato's Symposium. Was it the Phaedra or Symposium where the gods originally created man and woman as a super being joined back to back, and united, they were so powerful that the gods feared that they'd actually take over, so they split them in half as an even pre-Christian understanding of the beauty of marriage and the complementarity of gender. And, you know, so that rich classical tradition we have. Look, speak to that for a moment. There was a book years ago where they quoted actually Osama bin Laden, who said, when people see a weak horse and a strong horse, they always bet on the strong horse. Mm. And his take was that what he was about was demonstrating such strength that he would gain a lot of followers and stuff. Now, the writer who was quoting him was talking about the lack of confidence that Western culture has. It's a huge issue. So here we are creating these phenomenal works of art. And for all, I often say to people, you know, when they're criticizing Western culture, I say, we did come up with penicillin, right? Mm. Like, there's so many incredible achievements. Campion's really proud of that tradition. How can that Western tradition, what should we be proud of in it, in our education space?
Well, most of it.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, there's always mistakes. I mean, human history is human history. It's fallen human beings making mistakes. But the actual deposit of the wealth of Western civilization, the Judeo-Christian, dating back to the classics as well, is just so rich. So, so rich. And we are at a risk today. I mean, there's this sort of, you know, it's a trend that's been going on for decades of basically a self-loathing about the Western tradition in our institutions, and it's everywhere. And you certainly see it in identity politics, which is basically sees Western culture as white and masculine and the enemy.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And that is really taken hold of our institutions, particularly in higher education, but all through our corporations, our governments and so on. It's just everywhere. this basic skepticism, but also downright antagonism towards our Western heritage. And certainly at Campion, we see ourselves, one of our missions really is to evangelize with this Western tradition, yeah. is to say, hang on a tick, it's not all bad. It's complex, absolutely. Mm. History is complex and there's mistakes. But that rich tradition is where a place like Australia, where the United States comes from.
Yeah, and
that's where we come from.
I'm interested in that because I've often wondered, now there'd be many constitutive elements to this and we don't necessarily need to turn this into the Catholic Teacher Philosophy podcast, which is what I'd probably do if I was unrestrained. Now, what is it, do you think, about the Western tradition in terms of its philosophical anthropology, its understanding of the person? How has it generated what it has, like in terms of free enterprise, private property, the value and dignity of the person? Is it because in the broad Judeo-Christian tradition, there's a sublimation of individual desire to bigger parameters? Is it that? Like, I mean, I go about my life. Why don't I, you know, as Christopher West would say, I don't need a law to tell me not to kill Karen or, you know, or to cheat on my taxes. Yeah. I see myself cosmologically as a contingent being, partnering or hoping for grace to help me partner with what God's doing in history. So do we get the best of Western culture when large numbers of people throughout history have sort of felt that kind of thing and they live and behave in a certain way? Is that part
of it? Absolutely. I think it's there's some key points. One is that the inherent dignity of each and every individual person is a key aspect of this tradition that's allowed it to flourish. Another is that sense of the transcendent, that we are contingent beings, that I am not the center of the universe, and that, you know, my decisions are important, and what I do is important in a more cosmological sense than simply, you know, a materialistic sense. Absolutely. Another key thing I think of the Western tradition in terms of its philosophical underpinnings is the fact that for both the Jews and the Christians, you know, nature is not God.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, particularly with the development of science, the development of governments and so on, that nature isn't God.
Mm.
And that nature is good. Human nature is very good, but it's not God.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key point. And I think really since the Enlightenment brought a lot of good, but it also brought some problems. And this radical autonomy is problematic, and that's where we're at the moment, where it's just me, and I'm not part of a larger tradition, I'm not part of a larger cosmos, it's about me. And I think that's where the Western tradition in a sense sort of lost its way a little in that, and we're in a sense bearing that fruit now.
There's so much in what you're saying. I was listening to a really good masterclass yesterday from a neuroscientist talking about depression, and he was talking about the pharmacological basis of it, and the question was, what is the cause of depression? It was really interesting from a top-level global expert. And he was saying that really what it is that we evolved for community, relationship, spirituality, and all of that has rapidly disintegrated in a very short space of time. So often when you talk about the dignity of the person and the relationships and all that stuff that was in place, not perfectly, sure. I mean, Victorian England, you know, you get dysentery and, you know, polio and all that. We get that. Yeah. But there was a certain rich spiritual, relational, communal context. And I think from a Catholic education point of view, two points about what you've been saying. I wonder how much of the mental health we're seeing for our young people is around this breakdown of meaning, belonging, I am loved unconditionally. And also when you were talking before about truth, beauty and goodness, there's this what they call sensitive periods in human education or educational psychology where we're more attuned to stuff. And I think obviously our young people are hungry for truth. I mean, they're, you know, they desire beauty, they want goodness. Robert Barron gets that too. So again, best product in the world, our job is to work on the marketing. So,
I mean, we believe that each and every human person is created in the image and likeness of God.
Amen.
And they are striving. You know, so every soul is just yearning for this truth, beauty and goodness.
Yeah.
And yet the world just smothers it.
It smothers it, and it also presents, as it's like almost a cliche, a false vision of what. Now, it blew my mind the other day, and I hope I get this in the show notes. One of the guys here will, when you're editing, if you'll get this in the show notes, the link. It's a great interview between Jordan Peterson and Russell Brand. Okay. Now, people are probably familiar with both of those guys, but for many years, Russell Brand was kind of the epitome of licentiousness and sexual indulgence, and he was a heroin addict. And but many people wouldn't know he's quite the academic. Like, he's a very intelligent guy. So they're doing this podcast the other day, and 40-odd minutes, it's pretty good, but it's not memorable. And there's this moment. I was driving in the car, and basically Russell Brand, without knowing it, gives this brilliant, like, 1980s, 1990s Catholic youth camp testimony. He just goes, well, you know, I filled up my life with all this stuff, didn't I? You know, I had all these drugs and sex and pornography. And he's talking like this, and he goes, but I found this void, didn't I? There's this big interior void, and nothing. And then he said, I guess, Jordan, that we kind of feel this. We need to feel this spiritually, don't we? And I'm there going, did you just say that? Like, it was just this perfect, you know, you just wanted someone to go, hey, man, can I get a witness? Like, it was powerful that here's somebody, a global figure, who's experienced everything that's on offer, that our culture is saying to young people, this is what you want. And they're just going, it led me to addiction. Yep. It led me to dysfunctional relationships. Yep. So I think we can be proud of what we're trying to do in Catholic education. So moving along, you're teaching at Notre Dame for a while. And then what was the next move?
To Campion.
Was to Campion.
So, yeah,
from
there. So I was at Notre Dame for about 8 years,
yep.
teaching theology, yep. mostly undergrad, bit of postgrad theology. Yep. And then moved to Campion 3 years ago.
Yep.
And
easy
yeah,
decision.
Loving it. Not easy. No, not easy. So I went from a more, an academic teaching position to an administrative position. So it is a change. I still do a bit of teaching and talks and so on, but it's not the same, you know. Developing a course, teaching a course and doing the assessment. So it's a very different sort of job. But I'm loving it too. It's a bit more, I suppose, people-orientated, out in the community-orientated. But at the same time, you know, overseeing what I think is a real jewel in education in Australia that's very new, very unusual in Australia for our American listeners. It is the only liberal arts college in Australia, only higher education institution devoted to the liberal arts. And so we are unique, but it's hard to get that cut through because we are new and unique, but it's I think a real, or acts as a corrective to a lot of what else goes on in higher education in Australia.
Because I think back in that factory model, so many of our kids still come out of our schools in the doctor lawyer mentality, and I've stood in front of, you know, thousands of kids and said to them, there is only one reason to become a doctor or lawyer, and they pause and I really build it up and they all look at me and I go, it's because you really want to be a doctor or a lawyer. And they just go, they're very deflated. I'm going, so often our kids are still in that modality of, you know, I'm going to be a doctor or a lawyer. And that's the thing. And here in Canberra, the national capital, you know, we have the law school here at ANU, and there's just this vast stream of people going into law. Now, hey, lawyers out there, people married to lawyers, please don't unsubscribe. We need lawyers. But there's a great American, African-American blues guitarist called Robert Cray. He used to call him the master of the Stratocaster. And he's got this great line, this great song, and there's this line that goes, you can buy me a car, fill up the tank. You can tell me a boat full of lawyers just sank. No offense to lawyers, right? Okay, we love you guys. Now, but my point is that what Campion does is probably bring this bigger vision about what you can do and what the call on your life is. What do you guys do well? What do you think you do well there?
Well, our academic program is first rate. And so I think just our program of looking in an integrated way at the whole of, you know, the Western intellectual tradition is well, it's the only one in Australia, so it's the best one. Mm. But I think it would be the best even if there was lots of others.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think what we do, and going back to, I suppose, the whole idea of being a lawyer, you know, that's the second most popular pathway for our students.
Is it really?
So they finish, they do a three-year BA in the liberal arts,
yep.
and go and do postgrad law.
Yep.
And they are just equipped so well
yep.
to be a well-rounded lawyer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they know where the law has come from. They know it.
That's a good point.
When our students go into postgrad law, they said, well, it's such an advantage.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these others entering. They've got no idea of Western understanding of the person, law, and so on, and history.
So let's extrapolate that, because what you're saying is, now I have to go and edit out all the stuff I said about lawyers. But what you're saying is something really important. You're going, okay, so these guys may go on to be lawyers, doctors, absolutely, neuroscientists, softball coaches, whatever, but they're going to do that within a formation construct which is very rich, and it's embedded in a Christian anthropology of personhood. And so I want to extrapolate that to all Catholic education, everybody listening, that one of the most powerful things you do is not just prepare people for life necessarily or for further study or vocational careers, but you help them go into the wider world with a particular vision of history, life, what it means to be human, what is meaningful. And I think what you're saying is crucial. Like, you know, what if we had tons of great lawyers out there that had a passion for genuine justice, not for buying a Bentley? Now, you can buy a Bentley, that's fine, but
a just Bentley.
A just Bentley. We want both. We want lawyers driving Bentleys with a deep concern for justice.
Absolutely.
So what's a challenge in your work? What do you find challenging?
Everything.
You do? which pushes you to grace, right? Which
it
pushes
does,
you to grace.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everything's a bit of a challenge. I guess for me, I suppose one thing I haven't spoken about is the vocation I have, which is as a husband and father. So the challenge is often, sometimes I don't like that word balancing because it's not really a balance. So that is my vocation. Mm. So that's what my primary thing is. But it can be a challenge with this work because it takes up a lot of the mind.
Yeah.
So from all sorts of things, because we're a residential college, so we have students living there. So there's all those little difficulties of residential life to the academic side, through, you know, everything else that has to happen. And then dealing with that in terms of my mind when, you know, I'm at home, you know, and you've got your children there who, you know, need your attention.
100%.
And you've got your mind sort of looking at some financial question or some issue at work. And that is always, and that's no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
So when your vocation is as a, you know, as a husband, father, whatever, that is a challenge and something that you really need the Lord for.
Yeah,
and that's where...
Particularly what you're doing, because you're building something visionary still. So it's not just that you're in maintenance mode trying to keep this thing ticking over.
It's like, just, I mean, we're...
Because you love it.
Just starting and we're growing and it's constant things. But that's where your relationship with the Lord is crucial.
Yeah.
And, you know, daily prayer. Without that, it's whatever, you know, particularly for teaching, I think is absolutely crucial.
Well, let's get to that. I just should mention quickly, yesterday I recorded a brilliant interview with Dr. Greg Bataro, who founded the Catholic Psychological Institute and has written the book The Mindful Catholic. So if you haven't heard that podcast, go check it out, because when you're talking about being at home and trying to keep the focus there, his stuff's been great. Where, you know, I used to have a saying in seminars, wherever you are, be all there. And it's hard. It's really hard to switch boxes and turn the phone off. But the Catholic mindfulness tradition, which really is the Catholic contemplative prayer tradition, can help us all to be more embedded in the moment and more trusting of God. So everybody check that out. So let's go on with this, what you just mentioned. I want to talk about how you sustain the vocation. This is the core of what I'm trying to do with encouraging teachers. Resilience, burnout, cynicism, exhaustion. It's a human vocation. Lots of humans. Lots of humans with needs. Lots of humans with histories and brokenness and challenges and beauty and excellence and all this stuff. So let's talk about how the Catholic educator, both yourself, the people that work with you, the people listening to this podcast, what do we need? What are some of the crucial elements that are going to be necessary for all of us in this Catholic education space to maintain this journey? What do we need?
That is a good question.
It's a big question.
It's a big question.
It's a big
isn't
question.
It? It's a huge question. I guess I suppose I could answer it. I mean, at Campion College, it's slightly different. So we you know, there's compliance and so on, but we run our own ship, and you know, we're sort of left alone, really.
Yeah.
You know, in a Catholic school, teaching in and just casting my mind back to when I was teaching in a high school, I certainly had that temptation towards cynicism, temptation towards, oh, you know, what's the point of this? That's a constant for your Catholic teacher. And so there's a couple of things perhaps I'd say. One is that I think what we need for our teachers is a greater awareness that we're not just in what you've called that factory model, that a Catholic educator has to be about the human person, those human persons in front of us, whether they're in their first year of school or right up towards the end of their school.
Yeah.
each of them is a person created in the image and likeness of God. But each of them, I think, needs to be, and this is where Catholic schools, I think, should be a point of difference, perhaps more than they are, to be able to pass on to that student that it's not just about an education, not just about the job at the end, what sort of job I'm going to get, what mark I'm going to get, what ATAR score I'm going to get, you know, entry into university. It's not just about that. That's important, yes, but it's not. That's not the primary focus. Mm. The primary focus is understanding who you are as a person created in the image and likeness of God, loved by God. And that can be done. I mean, we've got a lot of non-Catholics in our school as well. Yeah. So it can be done in a very philosophical, humanistic way, fully in line with the great truths of Catholic faith. And I think that can be done just by teaching them, and this is by giving a call out to what we do at Campion, teaching them some of the great jewels of our tradition, which are just so interesting and so wonderful. And I think we should be a bit bolder in terms of not being so constricted with our curriculum.
And the reason many people struggle with this, and this is what I want to get you to address for us, and when I do keynotes, I always say that you cannot give what you do not possess.
Yeah.
You can't be bold if you're not what the church documents call convinced and coherent. I always love that. It's the church documents on education, like Catholic teachers need to be convinced and coherent, so that we need to believe, we need to be convinced in the teachings of the faith, the truths, the dogmas. We need to decide if we believe them and assent to them, because we can't expect anybody else to. Or if we don't think they're important and relevant, we're not going to be passionate enough to want to share them. And we have to be coherent, which means we have to try and live in a way congruent with what we say we're teaching. Now, that's not Pelagianism. That's not just striving all the time, but doing the best we can with grace. So let me ask you, what do teachers need to do? So I talk about prayer, sacraments, speak to that. How can Catholic educators position themselves to go the distance, to give this rich formation to young people without burning out? What do they need in their life? What do they need to be doing?
Well, they need to know and love God. And so they go together. You can't love that which you don't know. And you can't know that which you don't love in a full way, in a real way. And so that needs to be cultivated. And so if you are a teacher in a Catholic school and you know, as you say, you've got to be convinced of what you're doing, your mission, and what the contents of that mission. But it's to keep growing in that knowledge and love. Keep growing in it.
How?
So, firstly, through prayer. Mm. Absolutely, through prayer. In theology, so in the study of theology, I was one of my great heroes in contemporary theology, with a couple of caveats, is Anselm von Balthasar. Yeah. And he had a great phrase called kneeling theology. So when we want to know something, we get down on our knees first when we're thinking about God. So it's that disposition of awe and wonder before God to say, well, God, I love you and I'm kneeling down before you as I come to know you, rather than just thinking, okay, I'm just going to learn this and with my head. So the prayer, the contemplative dimension when we're coming to know more and more about our faith is crucial. So as a teacher, you need to, well, pray for that desire to know more. Sometimes we can think, I've known enough, I've got my little certificate in RE or whatever, and that's enough. But you can't stop there. It's like with any discipline when you're teaching it. If you're in literature, history, science, whatever, you can't just stop there. You've got to keep learning about it. So if you are a religion teacher, you've got to keep learning. You've got to keep knowing, because in theology is that discipline where you can't stop knowing. Yeah, we're going to spend an eternity and we still won't know.
That's such a good insight. You're talking, I'm thinking, it's not like Isaac Newton or Stephen Hawking went, well, that's enough science
Me. Yeah, I've got it. You've got to keep going. And this is, again, where the system suffocates, because the schools, there'll be a new, educational fad will come and everyone will have to get the PD for that.
Yeah.
And I think I heard the last headmaster of Sydney Grammar, he's retired a couple of years ago. I heard him speak, and Sydney Grammar is quite a unique school. It's a bit more classically orientated. Mm. So they were teaching, Sanskrit and so on at this
which
school.
Which is useful. Which is great, very useful. You never know when you're going to need
point, them. Well, his point was that he said his teachers, there was this new edict from the state government saying, all teachers have to do this much PD. and so on. And so he said, oh, this was an excuse for all these new companies to start and deliver this PD.
Yeah.
So he said, well, I met this criteria. I gave my teachers every 3 years, 3 months off to go and do research on their subject area and to write an article or a book.
Wow.
He said, that's the best PD for a teacher.
Self-directed learning, isn't it?
Because that's what you need.
Yeah.
You need that space to say, okay, I'm an RE teacher in a Catholic school. I need that space to say, okay, I've got time, I've got this time to actually grow in the knowledge of my faith.
Yeah.
In a loving way, always in that loving, they go together, love and knowledge.
Not as
in
striving or as I must do this. Because, no. I mean, I'm going to be honest here, like what has scared me over the years is more than a few times seeing people climb the ladder of Catholic education who I just know are just, they couldn't give a damn. They're just driven by pure ambition and money. They're just like, you know, and if anyone's listening to that, that's scandalous, I'm sorry, but I've seen it. I've seen people who have no love of the faith. They just want the next thing and they want to be a principal. They know how to move, when to move to the next place. And, you know, it's not a great way to live. Like, I think you're robbing yourself, but ambition, you know, the church talks about that the church has a hierarchy of service. Mm-hmm. Ambition in matters of faith always makes me nervous. Like the only reason I think we should have ambition in Catholic education is how can I serve more people or where does God want to put me? Mm-hmm. There's a great line I used to share. I shared this in keynotes from Abraham Lincoln where his spirituality has always been quite contentious. We're not quite sure, but there's a great line where he said, I've been driven to my knees more times than I can possibly remember by the overwhelming awareness that I had nowhere left to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 1861, when all of that's coming down, you know, I mean, the burden he would have carried, that he goes to that place of like, I am not up to this. And I think that's what we need in Catholic education. We need to all be saying, you know what, I'm good and I know my stuff and I care, but I'm not up to this great thing that's upon us. Sorry, there's a little bit of a rant there, people, but I want to come back to what you're saying. I'm going to have to come up with a term for this. Like it's the craziness of modern school life where the teacher, with all their own family stuff going on, gets into the car park at 7:30 or 8 a.m. They guzzle some coffee that the Vatican should outlaw, because another of my missions is to improve the quality of teacher coffee. That's another podcast. So they charge you into their room and it's often, you know, trying to keep up. And that was like my experience. I think as the longer you go in teaching, you get a little bit better at that. But the idea that the most important thing I need to do is go to the chapel, that I need to get an app with the readings of the day and I need to give Jesus 10 minutes or 20 minutes. That's not happening a lot. Now, some people listening going, well, I do it. I thank you. I know you do it. Keep doing it. How do we fix that? What is that dynamic?
I think that needs a real cultural change in the schools. And I think it's a little bit, and it can be quite creative. And I think it's the role of, you know, your religious education coordinator, whoever's in that position of leadership in a school, should come from the top down, obviously. But the one there should be creative in trying to find that space for teachers where they can feel comfortable about saying, well, I don't have to actually just be sitting in an office marking. I don't have to be just preparing the next class. I don't have to. But part of my role is to be quiet with the Lord.
Amen.
Part of my role is to sit with some colleagues and discuss a theological question with no agenda, no thinking, we've got to teach this by this week or this by this week. Just to sit down together and say, you know, what is the nature of the Trinity? And just to play that out a bit. I mean, that's stimulating. That's what you need. Teachers need to have that stimulation.
Yeah.
And without that, it just becomes just, as you say, a bit of a factory.
So good.
And that's what kills the spirit, because it's not how it should be. And that's where I think our schools, and this is across the board, our state schools and everything in Australia, I think they're far too orientated towards processes and that end of time exam.
They're
not academic enough.
Yeah.
For the teachers as well as for the students.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, name a teacher who thinks, oh, I'm going to go and read the latest academic book in my discipline tonight and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
They're not, because they're burnt out. They should be, you know, in France, to teach at a higher level in France, you've got to have a master's degree in senior level, and they turn up to teach.
Yeah.
That's it. They turn up to teach. The rest of the time, they're expected to be researching.
Yeah.
And that's to cultivate a sense of, this is my area. I'm the master of this area.
Yeah.
And I've got to keep growing in knowledge. I love it. And I want to impart it to the student.
Yeah. And that's the essence, isn't it? Like, even in the work I do, like the stuff that I'm building, I guess, podcasts and tech-wise, like, I'm like, I want to learn more. And it's not like, I want to learn more and do more so that I can just reach more people. I want to actually just put gold and serve people. So I guess what you're saying is that this hunger to learn and to grow and to master their craft and to be really proud of that, you know, to be a master teacher. But in a Catholic educational paradigm, it would be, God has created me, you know, this is the old Cardinal John Henry Newman, you know, God has created me to do him some definite good. You know, he knows what he's about. I love that line. That if someone listening, you know, be encouraged. If you're an English teacher or you're coaching football, I mean, I interviewed Josh Varner on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's a high school football coach and in the States and student wellbeing guy. Just passionate about it, you know, just believes that through coaching American football, you can have a really positive impact on the lives of young people for God. So I want to encourage everybody that I think what Paul's saying here is, yeah, you're tired, you get tired, but that decision to read that article or to bring something fresh. But we need grace, right?
Absolutely.
So where are the fountains of grace? We talk about prayer. Where else can the Catholic teacher listening to this position themselves for grace, the grace that they need? What do they have to do?
Well, the sacraments.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully if they're in a Catholic school, there's regular sacramental life. Can't always be the case. I know, at least in Australia, where it's hard work. You know, there might be a mass every week, or every month, every year.
Yeah.
That's hard. Yeah. But outside of the school, you know, you can obviously get mass, and the sacraments are crucial. I mean, they're the way, the normal way, if you like, we receive grace.
Yeah.
And it's crucial. And that's where, I guess that's a way we can really model to our students too. When the sacraments are at the school, when there's mass at the school, we really model to our students.
Yeah.
We model who we are
and
what's important to us. And I think that's really, really very important. You know, and personal prayer is crucial. But, you know, grace is abundant, you know. We just have to turn our hearts to the quota system.
Yeah.
No.
Like, is there going, abundant. Well, this school here, you've reached a quota for grace now, so it's on you.
Yeah.
You know, I think the real dynamic we're talking about is, we all struggle with this, is the trade-off with time. We're busy. Mm. But the quote that I came up with a few years ago was, you always make time for dialysis.
Mm.
I love that line. It's like, so if your doctor says, I'm just going to pull something up on my phone here that I want to read. But if the doctor says to you, you need kidney dialysis, you're like, I ain't got time for that. And the doctor's like, fine, man, but it's on you, okay? Like, we make time for dialysis, which means that we make time for what is crucial and what's really important. So really, if you're listening to this, what we're saying is, we all need to reorient. It's kind of a Copernican inversion, which is, you know, no longer does God move around us. You know, we need to also try and move around God and position ourselves. This is a quote yesterday from Greg Bataro. It was on the last podcast. It's very short. He said, it doesn't matter what kind of responsibilities you have in life. Your mindset or belief system creates a filter of interpretation through which you perceive reality. If you think you don't have enough time, you won't. If you think you do have enough time, you will.
Mm.
And for me, it's like, I've got 3 kids under 10 and crazy business commitments, travel commitments and everything. But most of the time, the first part of that day he gets, I used to say to people, I don't trust myself enough, man. I don't trust myself to, so I could wreck things if I didn't get that.
Mm.
So let me ask you a question. I hope I don't make you uncomfortable, but I met you just a minute, you know, before the interview. And in passing, I asked if you've been waiting long, and you said, no, you just ducked into the cathedral. Being really honest with us, why?
Because I need it. It's funny. I mean, daily prayer for me is the number one priority in terms of knowing that, you know, I couldn't do it without him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and I thankfully with my wife, that is a priority for both of us. And so that obviously helps, so we can encourage each other.
Yeah.
So you've had your prayer time today. Well, you haven't. Okay, well, I'll look after the kids a bit.
Yeah.
And then I'll go and have some quiet time. Because
without
that sort of that time with the Lord, that one-on-one time, as you say, everything else seems out of whack.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because, you know, God is the God of order, the God of love.
Yeah.
And just to spend that time, it just, everything else, and to take from your guest from yesterday, Dr. Bataro. You know, that becomes the prism through which you see everything.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, everything can be happening. But if you have the that grace, that relationship with the Lord,
yeah,
it just contextualizes everything in the light of eternity. And that's true Christian hope, and gives you the joy and whatever to be able to cope with that. And it just doesn't mean it's easy, but without it, it's nigh impossible.
So my signature line from my book is that you cannot do a supernatural task with natural resources. So, friends, summary, I think we're talking about positioning ourselves for grace. That's all, you know, I don't have much else for you. I'll be saying it in every podcast. Say, you're crazy enough to keep listening. I'm going to keep telling you, we can't do this without seeking grace. Now, listeners, we're going to wrap this up because Dr. Morrissey and I have a crucial thing that we have to do for the glory of God. We have to go and have a really nice Italian meal and drink wine. And we take that burden on
does
our shoulders.
Does that get edited?
Of course it does. That's very Catholic. You know, Chesterton said that Catholicism is a red wine and a cigar
absolutely.
And a good steak. So, listeners, for you, for your edification, we're going to go and have a good meal and discussion and have a good glass of wine just to fill ourselves up so we can continue the mission. So that's we're doing that next. But I want to wrap up with this. So let me ask you this question. Imagine that you're asked to speak to a room of 1,000 Catholic teachers, and you've got a few sentences or a couple of minute or so to impart something to them. You can see yourself up there on the stage. What would you say? What would you want to impart to Catholic teachers about their vocation, about their work, about young people? What is the essence of, what's your DNA that you'd want to share with people?
A couple of things. One is the nobility of their task.
Yeah.
That is a noble vocation. And that gets lost a little bit, again, in the factory system. Your nobility, maybe to define that word.
Yeah.
And say that it's, and what you're doing is really a vocation that is irrepeatable, unique, and noble. And the other thing, apart from what we've already spoken about, relationship with God, openness to grace, but one thing we haven't spoken about that I think is also really important for a Catholic school is to say, okay, you're coming from different academic disciplines. Some of you might be RE teachers, some of you English teachers, some of you science teachers, whatever. But there is a Catholic way of being that sort of teacher.
Yeah.
And to not be afraid of that. And I would encourage anyone who's a faculty head in a school to say, and to go back to something we were talking about a bit before, is to really encourage their faculty to be on fire with what they teach.
Yeah, be proud.
And that if you're an English teacher, our English curriculum will reflect all the goodness, truth and beauty of what we've received.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to read sort of a trashy novel that's not going to help our students. We're going to read a book that will impart truths, impart goodness, impart beauty. And that goes across the curriculum. I mean, it's not necessarily a Catholic way of doing maths, but there is a Catholic way of talking about, order and truth. And how do we know that 1 + 1 = 2?
Yeah,
A lot of people out there think there's no objective truth, but 1 + 1 = 2. You know, that sort of should really be through the whole school.
Yeah, it's across.
Because at the moment, I think, we might do the RE well.
Yeah, we expect
everything else is sort of disconnected from that. And that just, so I would be really encouraging teachers to think more holistically about their subject matter, but about their whole mission as a Catholic teacher in a Catholic school, imparting the great
that's
tradition.
So rich, because we can so easily fall into that trap of evangelization is street corner preaching. Yeah. Evangelization is running an RCIA project. All have their place.
Absolutely.
But evangelization of culture can mean teaching great literature. Or you're working in shop, or what our American brothers and sisters would call shop class, or we would call, manual arts. Mm. You can teach a young person about the beauty of what they're creating.
Absolutely.
And having mastery. And if you're going to make something, make it beautiful. Why? Yeah. Because beautiful things are better.
Yeah.
Objectively better than things that
absolutely.
Are ugly. And so if we're going to make this letterbox for our parents, we're going to mailbox, we're going to make it look great. So everybody listening, please, whatever you're in, whether you're coaching a sport, whether you're working in the front office, whether you're doing photocopying, you can bring something special. And this is what Dr. Morrissey is talking about with this Catholic vision of what it is that you mean to do. So my friend, in the interest of brevity and us pressing on together to solve all the problems of education, listeners. We should keep the recorder with us. Could be interesting, but we're going to have a good some time together now to just kick around a few ideas. But everybody, thanks so much for listening. I'll do an outro again later, but I hope you got a lot out of this. It's been a really rich journey for me to listen. We're going to put some links into Campion College. So wherever you're hearing this, we want you to go and check out Campion College. You might be a parent in Australia if you're listening. If you're a teacher and educator, we want you to put Campion College in front of your students. We want you to raise awareness for us. I've been there. I've spoken there. It's a fantastic institution. So please grab that link and make sure you get Campion College in front of your senior students. Dr. Paul Morrissey, thank you for coming all the way on this hot tropical day in the national capital. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jonathan. Pleasure.
Hey guys, Jonathan with you once again. I really hoped you enjoyed that. We had some laughs. We covered some deep content. He is such a good guy. I want you to know we had a great lunch afterwards. Just great to spend some time with him. So I hope that was a blessing to you. I hope there's a few ideas there, a little bit of encouragement that's useful to you. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast once again. Please subscribe. But the biggest favor you could do me is to grab the link wherever you're hearing this. Would you send it to a few friends? We want to get these episodes to as many Catholic educators around the world as possible. I want to see thousands upon thousands of Catholic teachers being encouraged on a weekly basis in their vocation. So share it, subscribe to it, make sure you've taken the Going Deeper free trial. And that's pretty much it from me this week. We have got so many good guests coming up, so I really look forward to bringing you some great content. Please stay close to Jesus, stay close to the sacraments, stay close to the source that's going to sustain you in your vocation. I'm Jonathan Doyle, going to have another great podcast for you next week.